We begin the current daf in Sefti Ksubis, daf Pei Dal. We begin in the bottom of daf Pei Gimel Abeis, six lines up in the bottom of the Yomid, where the Gemara continues explaining the previous Mishnah. And that is, we had in the Mishnah that the husband, although he has three different rights to the woman's, to his wife's Nichsi Milug, specifically that he gets to eat the Paris, moreover, if she sells the field, thereby he's going to lose the ability to have the Paris, he can nullify that sale. And third of all, if she dies when he's still alive, he inherits her Nechsi Maluk. So the Mishnah said, the husband has the ability to remove himself from those rights by saying, Dinu Dvarim Ainli. Now, if he wants to remove himself just from the Mechiri, he says, B'Nechsaich. If he wants to additionally remove himself from the Peiris, he says, B'Peirisaich. And moreover, if he wants to remove himself from the ability of inheriting her after she dies, he says, B'Chayach U'B'Maisach. Now, however, regarding that third component of removing himself from the ability to inherit his wife's Nechsi Milug, if she dies before he dies, the Mishnah quoted a disputing opinion that Reb Shimon Gamliel, I mean, he argued on the Tanakam, and he says that, no, the husband cannot say, I mean, he could say it, but it will not be halachically valid if he says, Din Dvarim Ainli, regarding his inability to inherit his wife's Nechsi Milug. And the reason, as it was quoted in the Mishnah, is because that's Masna, Masha Kasa Bateira, because Reb Shimon Gamliel holds that the inheritance of the husband of his wife's Nechsi Milug is biblical. So the Torah says he does inherit. He cannot make a condition going against the Torah. And then since it's a going against the Torah, that Tanai is batal, and therefore he will inherit it, even though he says that I don't want to inherit it. And that's what the Gemara quotes over here, that Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, that this was the opinion Reb Shimon Gamliel said. Now that Omer Rav says, Halacha k'Reb Shimon Gamliel, Halacha follows like him, which is that when he makes this din advarim regarding not to inherit, he will not inherit it. But v'loy mitame, but not based on his reasoning, which is given in the Mishnah, which, as we said, the reason for his qualification not being valid is because he's masna masha kasa b'tera. So the Gemara wonders, my halacha k'Reb Shimon Gamliel v'loy mitame. What does Rav mean when he says that the halacha follows like him, but not based on his reasoning? So, if you say, halacha k'Reb Shimon Gamliel, that halacha follows like him, dama, that he said that if his din advarim, what he's saying, that he's not going to have any ability to litigate for the inheritance. And therefore, emesa yirishana. So therefore, since that doesn't work for him to say that, so therefore, if she dies before him, he does inherit her. So regarding that halacha, Rav agrees to. But, v'lav mitame, not based on his reasoning, because Ilu Reb Shimon Gamliel Savar Masna Masha Kaza B'Tera Tanai Batal. Whereas, although Reb Shimon Gamliel says the reason why it's not going to be valid, his stipulation, and then thus he will inherit it, is because it's going against what the Torah said, and therefore his condition is invalid. Now, but for Rav Savar Tanai Kayim, but Rav holds that actually a condition going against the Torah is valid. That would be going like Reb Yehuda, who was quoted earlier on Nafnon Vav Med Aleph, regarding someone that engages a woman on stipulating that, however, that he doesn't have to provide her with she'er k'sus and ayna, with clothing, cohabitation, and food. So since it's regarding things of monetary law, regarding the she'er and the k'sus, Rabbi Yehuda says that actually the condition is going to be valid. And here we're discussing monetary law. So although it's going against the Torah's law, but since it's monetarily, the tonight is going to be kayim. Now, then the question would be, so if that's the case, that Rav argues on the reasoning of Reb Shimon Gamliel, so then why would it be that he does inherit her, and that if he holds that the Tanai is Kayim, so then why does he inherit her? Is because Uksaver Yerushas Abal Drabanim. That's because Rav holds that the husband's inheritance of his wife's Nechsi Milug is only rabbinic law. The Chacham also chizikul Devreim Yisim Mishal Torah, and that is, although he holds that regarding biblical halacha, he is allowed to make a stipulation, but actually he holds that the inheritance of the husband is rabbinic law. And the rabbis made their law stronger than the biblical law. And therefore, his tanai is going to be batal. So he cannot make a condition in spite of the fact that if it were to be biblical, Rav would hold that you could make a condition. So it's coming out that he holds the same halacha like Reb Shimon Gamliel, but not based on Reb Shimon Gamliel's reasoning. Because Reb Shimon Gamliel is coming because of it's masna mashav kasa b'tera tanai batal. Rav holds, no, tanai would be kaim. It's because it's rabbinic. And that's why it's not going to be batal. Now we continue to talk about Pedal Menav, where the Gemara asks, the Sava Rav Tanai Kaim, is it really true that Rav holds that, and this is where he argues on the Tam of Reb Shimon Gamliel, that generally if you make a stipulation going against Masha Kasa B'Tera Tanai would be Kaim, it would be valid? But we learned the following Machlaikis. If someone tells his friend, look, I'm going to sell you this object, on the condition that you don't have the Torah prohibition of aynah, which is charging for an item too much than what the normal range of it is, so Rav Amar yesh le'olav aynah. Rav holds it's not true. It will be within the purview of the prohibition of aynah, because that's making condition in the face of a biblical violation of altainu, and therefore the halachas of aynah will apply. Shmuel Amar ein le'olav aynah. Shmuel says no. Since he made the stipulation, it will not have a problem of the halachas of aynah. So you see clearly that Rav holds masna akash b'tayra tanai is batal, and that's what has the halacha of aynah. So how can you say that he argues on the tam of Reb Shimon Gamliel? So the Gemara says Ella rather will give a different explanation. Halacha k'ri Reb Shimon Gamliel, what's the halacha that he's saying like Reb Shimon Gamliel, is the amar that Reb Shimon Gamliel said. Just like Reb Shimon Gamliel said, that if someone makes a condition that is not like what the Torah says, so the condition is invalid, like Rav just agreed in the halachas of aynah. The lav mitameh, but not like the reasoning of Reb Shimon Gamliel, whereas because the ilur Reb Shimon Gamliel savar meisi yershena, whereas although Reb Shimon Gamliel holds that when the wife dies, he will inherit her, v'rav savar meisi yershena, Rav holds, if she dies before him, he will not inherit her. The reason being is because Rav holds that the inheritance of the husband is only rabbinic, and that the rabbis did not make their halacha stronger than biblical halacha, and therefore he could make a tanai of not inheriting her because only rabbinic. Now, that the Gemara asks if that's the interpretation, but that's actually not what the Gemara quoted Rav as saying, that he holds like his halacha but not like his tam, because to the contrary, this interpretation would be haimi taimei. Actually, he would be holding like his reasoning, which is that you're not allowed to be masna mashakas b'tera. That's a reasoning, but v'loy kehilchasahu. But however, it would be that he doesn't hold like his halacha. Whereas in regards to the Yerusha, he holds that the husband will not inherit her, because you could make a condition. Although maybe here it's because it's rabbinic, but that's regarding the halacha that they differ and the time they agree. But the way it was quoted was that Rav holds like his halacha, not like his reasoning. So rather, the Gemara attempts a different approach. Halacha k'Reb Shimon Gamliel, the Amar, like we said before, what's his halacha? That's the practical ramifications. That's in Mesa Yerushena. Although he said din advarm ainli, even when you're dead, that's not valid. And if she dies, he's going to inherit her. Now, v'lav mitamei, so what is it that he argues on his reasoning? Because the ila Reb Shimon Gamliel savar, whereas Reb Shimon Gamliel holds, although regarding biblical halacha, which Shimon Gamliel holds that the Yerusha of a husband of his wife's next maluk is biblical, so he holds that the tanai is going to be batal, and therefore here it's going to be batal, and therefore he inherits her. But the inference of Shimon Gamliel's halacha is that, however, regarding rabbinic law, for example, if he makes a condition that he's not going to eat the peiros, there Shimon Gamliel would agree that tanai kayim, the condition would be valid, because you could be masna on regarding rabbinic halacha. On that, Rav savar afilu b'drabbanan, that Rav argues on Shimon Gamliel, and he holds that no, even by rabbinic law, for example, if let's say he makes a condition that he's not going to have the peiros of the nechsem elug, even there Rav holds tanai batal, that the condition is going to be void. And the reason is because the rabbis made their halacha as strong as biblical halacha. And of course, Rav would hold that by the Yerusha, which is biblical halacha, for sure he cannot be masna, and he would inherit. But Rav argues on Shimon Gamliel, and he holds that even by peiros, it's going to be a void stipulation, because even by rabbinic law, you can't be masna on what they said. Now, that the Gemara asks, how could that be the interpretation? Hi, but this interpretation is kitaimei, is like the reasoning of Reb Shimon Gamliel, because Rav holds like Reb Shimon Gamliel that if you're masna mashakas b'tera tanai is batal, and v'kehilchasehu, and he agrees to his halacha too, that if the woman dies, that he will inherit her. It's just that v'rav moisefu, Rav just adding on to his halacha. He's saying that not only is your halacha correct and your reasoning correct, I'll take it a step further, that rabbinic law is just like biblical halacha. So it doesn't fit into the dictum that we said, that Rav holds of his halacha, but not like his reasoning. So El Rav, the Gemara concludes, halacha k'Reb Shimon Gamliel, the Amma that he says, in Mesa Yerushan. Rav agrees to the halacha that although he said din advarm ainli, even when you're dead, that when she dies, he will inherit her. But v'lav mitameh, it's not going according to his reasoning, Because the Eilu Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Sava Yerushas Abal Dairaitza. The reason is because what's his reasoning why it's going to be void, that stipulation? Because he holds that the Yerusha of the husband of his wife's Nechse Milug is biblical. And hence, and whoever makes a condition against a biblical law, that nullification is that stipulation is void. Rav's coming from a different angle, from a different tam. He holds that the inheritance of the husband is only rabbinic. And the rabbis made their law as strong as biblical halacha, and that's why he holds that titnai is going to be batal. Not because it's biblical, like Rav Shimon Gamliel, but even though it's rabbinic, but the rabbis made their law like biblical halacha, and therefore just like biblical as masnag masha kaza b'teret tnai's batal, he's also going to be tnai batal, and therefore the tnai that he said that he's not going to have after she's dead is void, and therefore he will inherit her. But again, it's not like Rav Shimon Gamliel, who is coming from a biblical point of view. Now, on this interpretation, the Gemara asks, V'rav sava yirisha sabal dirabbanan? Is it really true that Rav holds, as the Gemara is concluding now, that that's why it's balav mitamei, that he holds that the husband's inheritance of his wife's nechse milug is only rabbinic? But vatnan, we learn in the Mishnah Masechet Zecharis as follows. The Mishnah says that, quoting Rabbi Yechon ben Bereko Omer, he says, Hayirish es ishtei. If someone inherits his wife, so yavzur lebnei mishpacha, he returns that inheritance to her family members by yovel, when all the fields go back to the rightful owners. But v'yinakalehet min adam, that is, as the Gemara assumes in the question, that means to say that he should cut off from the price. I mean, he returns to them, let's say, the fields that he inherited from his wife, that when she died, but he should charge a cheaper price when he returns it to them. I mean, they have to compensate him for the field that he had bought, by inheriting his wife, so he returns it to them, but they have to compensate him, but a cheaper price. Now, on that, the question was, Vavinba, we asked, Mike Asava, what does Rabbi Yechon Rebeka hold? If he holds that the inheritance of a husband of his wife is biblical, why should he return his inheritance? The halach of inheritance, you don't return by yovel, as the Gemara explains in Masechtas Bechoris. It's only things like by a sale. And v'idra abanan, and if it's rabbinic law, so where does money come in over here? Why should her inheritors have to pay the husband if biblically it's really theirs? It's rabbinic law that it goes to him, but by Yevil it has to go back. So why should they have to compensate him even the cheap price? And Adava Amarav Rav said to explain, that really Rabbi Yechon Rebeka holds that the inheritance of the husband is biblical. Now if it's biblical, so why does he have to return it? So it's talking about a specific case. Toma, that is, he inherited from his wife a burial plot, a cemetery. Now, mishum begam mishpacha. Now, the reason why he has to return it to Har Yarshim is because of it's degrading for her family, where it's a family plot, and if others are going to be buried because now the husband inherited and he's going to use it for other people, so then the family members of the wife is going to have to bury themselves in other places. It's degrading for her family. So Amar Rabbanan Lishkol Damir Lahadir. So the rabbi said that he should take money instead of the Beis HaKvaris and return to them the Beis HaKvaris. So then why does he have to charge him a cheaper price? If it's really his, it's just because of a rabbinic enactment that he has to give it back to them, so they should have to pay him full price. That's because Dimei Kever Ishta. That's because he really has to bury his wife. So one of the plots is the value of his wife, who he had to bury anyway. So that's not something that they should have to pay him for, because they're paying for the whole area. So he knocks off in the price the amount of the place of his wife's burial, because that he would have had to bury himself anyway. Now, Kedetanya, as the Gemara follows up this halacha of Rav, as we find in the Braisa, that if someone purchases a basic kfar from someone else, he has to return it even against his will. As the Braisa says, Amichri kivrei v'derech kivrei. If someone sells his burial plot and the path getting there, ma'modoy u'mokam espedoy, the different places where they would stop along the way towards the burial and the place where they eulogize. So if someone sold that, rights, so boin b'nei mishpacha, the children of the family could come, and they bury the seller's body in his burial plot, even against the will of the purchaser. And the reason is, because it's degrading for the family, that their family plot should not be able to use because he sold it to someone else. So that's how Rav explained Rabbi Yochanan Bereka that although biblically Yerusha Sabal, it's the Raisa, and it's only rabbinically that he has to give it back, that's why he has to give it back, and he charges less for Kfuras Ishtay. Now, but one thing that we see from this discussion is that Rav holds because Yerusha Sabal is the Raisa. So how can we say in the previous interpretation that Rav holds like Rav Shimon Gamliel's halacha, but v'loy mitami because he's coming that the Yerusha of the Baal is rabbinic? It's just that they made it like biblical halacha that you can't be masna on what it says. But here we see clearly that he holds Yerusha Sabal as deiraisa, which seemingly is like the halacha and the time of Rav Shimon Gamliel. So the Gemara answers, no, Rav, the Tameh, the Rabbi Yochanan Bereka got Madir, and that Mishnah Masechet Bechayrus, Rav was just coming to explain Rabbi Yochanan Bereka's opinion that the Yerushas of the wife, the husband, and Yerusha and his wife, is Deiraisa. But Valei, severely, he didn't hold like that. He held actually that it's rabbinic, and that's how we understand why it's Loi Mitameh, the Rav Shimon Gamliel, because he holds Yerusha Sabal is only Rabbanon, but it's because also physically devrim, just like Shaltaira, which is that you can't be masna on that, and that's why the tithe is going to be batal, and that's why the husband ultimately will inherit his wife, Nichsim Aluk, even if he said didn't dvarim, ainly after she dies. Nothing more continues with the next Mishnah, continuing on these halachas of Ksuba. So the Mishnah says, Misha Meis, somebody dies, and Vehiniach, he left over an Isha, a wife, Ubachayev, a creditor, and Vyarshan, and inheritors. Now, they're all vying for what he left over in his estate. Now, he had a deposit or a loan that someone else had at the time that he died. So, who gets it? Everyone wants to get the inheritors, the creditor, and the wife. So, for them, he says, that this loan or this deposit is given to the weakest of all the three parties. Now, the Gemara will explain exactly who is that a reference to. Now, but one thing is that although movable items of orphans are not indebted neither to creditors or to ksuba, and here we're talking about a milvah or pekudin, which is a movable item, the reason why here that there is a discussion that it could go to others is because it's not in their domain when he died. It was b'shus of the person that he deposited with or that he loaned it to. So Reb Tarfon holds that they could take it from the borrower or from the one that it was deposited to, and it could be given to the creditor or to the woman's kesuba, where that was something that was something that the mess, the one who died, was liable already when he was alive. So although generally metatlin diyasmi is not mishabdi, here it's different because it's not in their rishus from when the person died, and it was already something that he was mechuyven when he was still alive. Kiva, I mean, he argues in Reb Tarfon, and he says, no, ema rachman bedin. What do you mean you give it to the weakest one amongst the three parties? We don't have mercy when it comes to justice, to law. Elyonosnu lo yarshin. Rather, that it's given to the inheritors, and it wouldn't even help if one of the other parties, let's say the creditor or the woman, would what's called be typhus, would grab it before the yarshin get a chance to get it. And the reason is simple. Shekulan tzrichin shvua. Everybody who wants to collect from the estate of the one who died, has to make an oath, as the Mishnah teaches later on, Daf Pei Zayin Amud Aleph, that if someone's coming to collect from the estate of the orphans, you could only collect with an oath. And as long as they didn't make an oath, they don't have any rights in it. Now, we don't know if they have any rights here whatsoever, so they would have to make an oath. The Ein HaYershin Tzrichin Shvua, and the inheritors don't have to make a Shvua. That's just whatever they inherit. And therefore, once the person died, the inheritors get it right away, so it's in their domain. Once it's in their domain, it's metatli. And metatli diyasmi, alloy mishabdi. If you would say it's in someone else's domain, fine. But he's explaining that it's already in their domain because they have the upper hand, that they don't have to make a shvua, so the default is them. If it's theirs, it's metatli, and therefore no one else could take it. Similar case, hinich peris telushim min akarka. Similar, another metatlin item. If let's say there was detached the produce that was detached already from the ground. So on that, the Tanakhama says, "Kol ha-koydim ben zocha ben." Whoever gets there first merits it. If the inheritors get there first, they get it, and no one could take it away from them because since it's metatli, it's a movable item of orphans. So it's not indebted. Although there's obviously a responsibility, a lien on the departed person's property for creditors and the wife, but not on metatli. Now, however, this opinion, which is the opinion of Reb Tarfon, holds that if, let's say, one of the other parties gets there first, either the woman or the lender, they do merit. And the reason is because Reb Tarfon holds that grabbing it after the person's death, if the Yesaimim, if the orphans didn't get it first yet, that actually does help. So whoever gets there first gets it. Now the Mishnah continues and says, so let's say one of the parties, let's say the woman who wants to grab some money so she could collect her ksuba, let's say she goes and she grabs these detached produce. So, but however, let's say if Zachsa Isha Yesim ksuba, so let's say she grabbed, and whatever she grabbed, let's say her ksuba is 200 and it was worth 250. So she has surplus here, which is not rightfully hers. Or what the Baal Chayv, the creditor, ended up grabbing to collect, was worth more than his debt. So Hamaiser, the excess, Reb Tarfon, he says, Yinasun L'Koyshel Shabahem, so it's given to the weakest among them. In other words, the other collector who has a document, who has the lower hand. And the reason being is because once it goes to the orphans, then no one could collect anymore, not the woman and not the Baal Chayv. So therefore, whoever grabbed first, let's say the woman grabbed, and there's more that's left over, it goes to the Baal Chayv, or the Baal Chayv grabbed, and there's too much, it goes to the woman. Rabbi Kiva Aimer, again, he argues and he says, no. Ein merachmin b'din. What do you mean the weakest? We don't have mercy when it comes to law. Elyonosnu liyarshin is given to the inheritors, shekolm tzrichin shvua, because everybody has to take an oath. They're weaker in their claim. Veina yarshin tzrichin shvua, the inheritors don't have to make, and therefore the default is their position. Now the Gemara asks regarding the first case mentioned, the Mishnah, that it said a double case. It says, V'hoyulei pekodnoi milva. We wanted to pick a case where it wasn't in the domain already of the inheritors, because if it would be, it's metal liyasmi, it's loy meshabdi, the woman and the Baal Chayv would not have any claim whatsoever. It was talking about someone else's domain. So the Gemara asks, Lami lemisni milva and lami lemisni pekodnoi. Why do you have to say two cases, one of a loan and one of a deposit? So the Gemara explains, Sricha, we needed it. Because the itan and milva, had we only said a case of a loan, but how come Reb Tarfon, maybe over there only did Reb Tarfon say that it doesn't go to the inheritors, rather goes to the weakest one, whether it's the Baal Chayv or the woman. Mishum de milva lohitzonitna, because alone, when one someone lends somebody money, it's not something that's extant. In other words, even if the actual money is there, but it's not something that could be collected by the lender, because a loan is meant to be used, to be spent. And therefore, Reb Tarfon said over there that there is no money that could be considered in the domain of the assignment, because there's no substance, there's no actual money over here that we could say, oh, this is their money. Because what, even if it was the actual money that was loaned, it already becomes the borrower's money because it's supposed to be spent. So over there he said that, okay, so it's not the inheritors. And therefore, whoever it is that is the weakest one gets it. Of Bekodin de Isa Be'ene, but regarding a deposit where its extent, the object is there, and therefore wherever it is, it's considered in the domain of the orphans because they own it. Just because it happens to be in someone else's house, who cares? It's there, it's in their domain in regards to rights. So Eme Moidle Reb Kiva, maybe the Reb Tavon would agree to Reb Kiva that it would go to the Yarshin. So that's where I have to say the case of Bekodin too. And V'itanaha, if we only had the case of Bekodin of a deposit, but how come Reb Akiva? Maybe only what the Reb Akiva says, since the object is there, so it's considered it's owned by the orphans, maybe there he holds it goes to the orphans of a Bahach, but regarding a loan, even Moedler Reb Tarfon, maybe he would say he agrees to Reb Tarfon, since you can't say it's in their domain, maybe he would agree that it goes Likoshel, like goes to the weakest one of them. That's why Tzricha, that's why we needed to have both cases, to say that in both cases, Reb Akiva and Reb Tarfon argue and hold like their opinions, that either goes Likoshel Shebehen, or it goes to the Yershin. Now the Gemara asks to clarify that Myla Koshel, who does Reb Tarfon refer to when he says it goes to Koshel, it goes to the weakest among them, who from these three parties are the weakest? So Reb Yisrael Ruchanina Oimer, he says, it's L'Koshel Sheberoya. It's the weakest one for proof. In other words, whoever's document, which the document here is proof that they could collect, is the latest dated document, who cannot collect from purchases that were before that date, that person is the weakest one of being able to have collections, because you can only collect from your date and onward. So the latest date is really going to have a hard time collecting from anyone. So they're the one that we feel that's the hardest one to get. So these items that we're saying that it's not in the domain of the Yershin, so somebody could grab it, we give it to them because they're going to have the hardest time collecting. The one who had an earlier date can go ahead and maybe collect from the Chasam Shabbatim that were from earlier dates. Rabbi Yechonam, he says, no, it's L'Ksubas Isha. Who is the weakest one? We call the Kaishal is the woman who's coming to collect her Ksuba. And the reason being is because it's not normative for a woman to have to go ahead and check out all the properties that were left over in her dead husband's estate to find land to collect. Now, and so what would be the reasoning why we would give it to the woman who she's the weakest of them all? And the reason is Mishum Chinah, because of favor. And that is, we want that men should find favor in the eyes of women, and that women will want to marry them. And if they know that if there's going to be a circumstance where there's a loan or a deposit and everyone's vying for it, that she's going to get it, so that will make her more at ease to want to get married, that she won't be worried that she's not going to, that she's going to lose her ksuba, because she knows in these type of circumstances, the one from all the three that's going to get it is going to be her. So the Gemara says, actually, this machlikis amarom is ketanoi, it's a machlikis tanoim. The Braisa says, Rabbi Yoman Omer, he says, says that the one who's the weakest is the weakest one of his proof, meaning of his document, that is the latest one documented. And he says, and that's the proper and appropriate thing to do, that that's the one who should get this milva or the bekadin. Whereas Rabbi Loza Omer, he says, is leksubas isha, the weakest one is the woman who she's the last one being able to be good at collections. And Mishum Chinah, the reason why we said that she gets it is that the husband should find favor in her eyes to be able to go ahead and marry him. Now the Mishnah said that he niach peris hatalushin, that if he leaves over detached produce, so there was a machlekes in the Mishnah between Reb Kiva and Reb Tarfon, that if, let's say, the woman grabs it, or if the Malchev grabs it and there's more than what he's owed in that thing, so then is that then given l'kaisel shebehen, or is that then given to the Yarshin? So the Gemara wonders, Reb Kiva, since, as we quoted already in the Mishnah, that the reason of Reb Kiva that it always goes to the Yarshin is because they never have to swear. So my ear, Yemaiser, why does Reb Kiva argue only on the later case of when they grab it and then there's some excess from what they had grabbed that he says it goes to the Yarshin? But the problem is that even what they grabbed, which was the equivalent of what's owed to them, why do they merit even that part? Kula nama de Yarshin hava, what do you mean all of it should go to the inheritors? And as we said before in the Mishnah, because everything is merited by the Yarshim from the moment of death. And it's considered that it's Nixid Yasmi. And Nixid Yasmi, they can't go ahead and grab. So why is Rabbi Kiva only arguing on the excess part that it goes to the Yarshim? Even what they grabbed goes to the Yarshim. So the Gemara says, you're right, Enachanami. Va'aydi da'am Reb Tarfon Meiser, just because the Reb Tarfon was discussing Meiser. So Rabbi Kiva responded to what he himself was talking about, Satana Iwanami Maisa. So Rabbi Kiva also responded, you're talking about Maisa, that it goes to Kaishabam, I'm telling you it doesn't, it goes to the Yarshim. But the truth is, even regarding what was grabbed by the Balchayv or by the Isha, even that Rabbi Kiva would hold, that's removed from the Balchayv or from the Isha, and it goes to the Yarshim. Now the Gemara continues in Ahmed Beis and asks, which as Rashi explains, is just an inquiry, it's not a question, is that according to Rabbi Kiva, Tfisa Loi Mahani Klal, does grabbing never help? Because just the way we described it now is that when you have this deposit or this loan and the woman would grab or the Baal Chayv would grab, so Rabbi Kiva says that's not going to help. And it goes to the Yarshim, so does it never help? So Amar Rava Amar of Nachman, he says that it does help, but only Vahusha Tafis Mechayim, only if, let's say, the woman for her ksuba or the creditor goes and grabs this object that's the equivalent of how much is owed to him when the borrower or the husband was still alive. And that was the tradition that Rav Nachman had from his teachers. Now, and that's the case where even Rabbi Kiva would agree that since they grabbed it when he was still alive, then the tefisa will help. But after Misa, then it's already considered nechsa d'yasmi, that's already in their domain, then they can't grab anymore. Now the Gemara asks, well, Reb Tarfon, according to Reb Tarfon, that as we quote in the Mishnah, that when you have these payers tolution, where this detached produce, the Reb Tarfon said that at the moment of death, the inheritors do not automatically get it. And rather, as we quote in the Mishnah, that whoever gets it first gets it. So the question of the Gemara is, Demantri Hecha, where are these payers tolution? Meaning, as we spoke in the Reish of the Mishnah by the Pekon or the Milva, where we said specifically it's in someone else's property, that's why it could go to L'Kaisha Shabahen. But as we explained in the Mishnah, if it's in their domain already, then it's already considered theirs and no one could grab it. So what's the difference regarding this case of the Peir solution? Where is it? Obviously, it cannot be in the Rishus already of the Yisayim, because then it would already be considered automatically by default theirs, and no one could grab it, even according to Reb Tarfon. So where is it that he's saying whoever gets it first gets it? So there's a machlekes. Rav Shmuel Dar Tavai, they both say, that if it's piled up and placed in the public domain, then it's no man's land. So then it's not the Yershins yet automatically. Reb Tarfon doesn't agree to Reb Akiva's logic that because they don't have to make a Shavua and everyone else has to make a Shavua. So whoever gets it first gets it. Al Basimta, but if it's in a corner which is near the public domain, well, that's an area where people make business dealings one with the other if they want to talk calmly, where it's not out in the open in the hustle and bustle of the marketplace, and people go there to the side, then loy. There, Reb Tarfon did not say whoever gets it first merits it. And the reason is because since that's an area where it's fit to make a kinyan, unlike Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, as the Gemara says in general in Baba Basa, Daf Pei Dalma Beis, that Meshicha will acquire in a simta, even for those who hold in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim will not be kinyan. So it's not a hefker place. It's not no man's land. And therefore, at the moment of death, Reb Tarfon would agree, if it's in the simta, that the Yershin would inherit it. And therefore, whoever's trying to grab from it is like trying to grab it from the inheritor's house, and that's not valid. And even according to Reb Tarfon, in such a case, according to Rabbi Shmuel, if it's by a simta, they would hold that, Reb Tarfon would agree that it goes to the Yershin. Now, however, they both say that no. Afilu b'simta, even if it's in a simta, it's still considered not in the Yershim's domain, and therefore Reb Tarfon would agree that the Baal Chayiv or the Isha could grab it from that area. It's not considered yet Bishus HaYershim. Now the Gemara brings stories to illustrate these halachas that we were discussing. Dun Dainikur Reb Tarfon, there were judges who paskin the halacha, like Reb Tarfon, that a Baal Chayiv could be typhus, whoever gets there first can grab it. However, Vahadre Rish Lakish Lu'uvdi Minayu, Rish Lakish made them overturn their psak halacha. The reason being is because Rish Lakish held like Reb Akiva, who says that Tvesa doesn't help from the moment after death. And because of that, he overturned the halacha and he made them give it back to the Yershin. So Omalei Reb Yechon, Reb Yechon said to Rish Lakish, Asisa, what you practically did is that you made the opinion of Reb Akiva as if it was Keshal Terah, as if it was Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, a tradition passed down from Moshe Rabbeinu, what he received on Mount Sinai. Because you overturned an act of Beis Din. In other words, what Reb Yechon was telling Rish Lakish is, it's enough for us, if you want to hold a Reb Akiva, to say that that's initially how we should paskin, that a Baal Chayiv or an Isha cannot grab it after he dies. But once a Beis Din came and paskin and said that they could grab it, we should not have to turn over that psak halacha and make them undo what they decided. Now, what was their argument? So the Gemara says, Lema b'hokim mevim. Let's say that the machlekes of Yechon Rish Lakish was hinging on this idea. The marsa that Rish Lakish held, ta'a b'dvar mishnah, if a bezdin, if a judge, errs in the halacha that's written in the Mishnayos, where, since we hold the halacha always falls like Reb Akiva, where another yachad, another individual, argues on him. So, although this is not really, his opinion wasn't written in the Mishnayos, rather it's Amiram that quote this opinion of Rabbi Kiva, but in spite of that, as it's brought in the Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, the halacha is that chayzer, that we would have to turn over the psak halacha, as the Gemara there says, that even if someone makes a mistake in the words of Rabbi Shmuel, since it's so well known, that's considered like Tav B'Dvar Mishnah, therefore you have to turn over the Psak Halacha. So Rish Lakish said, Reb Akiva says Halacha, and Halacha falls like him, that's like Tav B'Dvar Mishnah. The fact that they pass like Reb Tarfon is wrong, and you even turn over such a Psak Halacha. Whereas Amarsa, Reb Yechanan held that no, Tav B'Dvar Mishnah ain't a Chayzer. He held that no, if a Beis Din errs in the Dvar Mishnah, that doesn't make them overturn the Psak Halacha. I think Amarsa says, Loi. No, that's not really the case. The cool Amma, because everybody agrees, even Reb Yechanan, the Tav B'Dvar Mishnah Chayzer. If someone errs in explicit halacha like a Mishnah, then we would overturn that psak halacha. But v'hacha b'hakim efekir, what they're arguing about was in the following point. That is, Mar Sava, Rabbi Yechanan held, halacha k'Rabbi Akiva mechaveri, the maxim that we have is that the halacha falls to K'Rabbi Akiva when he argues on another individual. But that was mechaveroi, from his friend, from his colleague, v'loi miraboi, but not when he argues on his teacher. And therefore, since he was arguing with Reb Tarfon, who is his teacher, therefore we wouldn't say halacha is necessarily like Reb Akiva, which would be considered Dvar Mishnah. So though, even if you want to say halacha should be like Reb Akiva, but that wouldn't be enough to overturn the psak halacha. Whereas Amar Sav Rish Lakish, all that, no, halacha fil mirabai. The halacha is that we pass on like him, even when he argues on his Rebbe, and that's such an explicit halacha like Reb Akiva, and therefore, since it should be well known, the bezdin that paskin like Reb Tarfon, that should be overturned, and therefore he made them take it out from the Baal Chayiv and give it to the Yershin. Or vi ibay seima, a similar answer the Gemara says, is that no, the kulei amalacha kribi kiva mechaveri maloi mirabai. That everyone agrees that if you tub dvar mishnah, it is chayzer. And that everyone agrees, even Rish Lakish, the halach is only kribi kiva when he argues with his colleague and not with his teacher. And this is what they argued about. Mar Savar Birchen held the Reb Tarfon Rabbi Hava. He held the Reb Tarfon was the Rebbe of Reb Akiva. And therefore, it's not so obvious that Halach is like Reb Akiva. Or Mar Savar Chaver Hava, however, Rish Lakish held that he was his colleague. And since it was his colleague, it's obvious that Halach is like Reb Akiva. And therefore, that's considered like a Tabid Var Mishnah. Or a similar answer, but Yiboy Yisemu, if you want, you could say, Dukuli Amma Chaver Hava. Everyone agreed that Reb Tarfon was his colleague. V'hocha Balkim, if what they're arguing about was, that Mar Savar Halach Itmar. Rish Lakish held that the way this was quoted, this maxim, is that the halacha is like Rabbi Kiva when he argues on his colleague. If that's the case, so again, this is an obvious thing. The halacha is like Rabbi Kiva, and therefore it's a tabid va mishnah. Omar Sav Rabbi Yechanan had the tradition that matin itmar, that matin means to say that we lean towards, we're inclined initially to go like Rabbi Kiva. However, if somebody does not like Rabbi Kiva, we don't overturn the halacha. And that's why Rabbi Yechanan held that it's not considered a Tabid Var Mishnah, it's only Matan like Rabbi Kiva, but someone could paskin like the disputant, in this case Rabbi Tarfon, and therefore he held that there shouldn't be a reason to overturn the halacha. Now another story regarding these halachas, Karevid Rabbi Yechanan, there was a relative of Rabbi Yechanan who was a creditor, Tafis Paradi Yasmin Misimta. He went and he grabbed the cow of orphans from a simta. As we said previously, that Rabbi Yechanan is of the opinion, not like Rabbi Shmuel, that even by a simta, the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon would hold that you could grab it before the Yisraelim get it. So Asla Kamid Rabbi Yechanan, so Amal Hui said to them, Shaper Tafstua, you did a great job. You went and you grabbed it, where the halacha is like Rabbi Tarfon, and Rabbi Yechanan said it's even by a simta, so you got it quickly before the orphans got it. So Asla Kamed Reb Shimon Lakish, and then they came in front of Rish Lakish, and Amalu, he said to him, Zilu Ahadr, go ahead and return it to the orphans, because Rish Lakish held, as we just said before, like Rebbe Kiva. And the reason being is because since their grabbing was after the death of the person, there's no validity to that at all. So he said, you have to give it back. So Asla Kamed Reb Yechanan, they came back to Rebbe Yechanan. So Amalu, he said to them, look, Maasa, what should I do? Shekenegdi, someone that's my equal, Chalak alai argues on me, and therefore, if you went in for the psak halacha, you got to listen to what he says, and you got to return it. Gemara brings another story. Hahu vakara di yasmi. There was this the watchman of the animal, the cattle, of orphans. The tafsi tayru minei, that a creditor went and grabbed after his debtor died. He figured, I'm stuck over here. The debtor's not here anymore. So he went and he knew that he had animals by that watchman, and he went and grabbed away an animal to collect his debt. So, Balchayv Amar Mechaim Tefesnale. The creditor said, I grabbed it when he was still alive. Now, that would work even according to Rabbi Kiva, who says you cannot grab. Rabbi Kiva agrees if it was grabbed when the person was still alive, that's a good tefisa. Ubakaro Amar No, Lacha Misatasi. The watchman says, not true, he's lying. He grabbed it after the person's dead, if that's the case. So if you hold like Rabbi Kiva, that has to go back to the orphans. So Asla Kamid Rav Nachman, they came in front of Rav Nachman. So Amalehi, so he said to the watchman, Islach Sahadi Ditafse, forget about when it happened. Do you have witnesses that witnessed him grabbing away the animal from your place? So Amalehi said, Lav, no, I don't really have. But I know this was the animal, I see it in his domain. So Amalehi, so he said to him, so you don't win, because since he has what's called a migui, he could have said a better claim. He could have said, I purchased this animal. And you would have no way of disproving that. So now I could also say that it's not true. I didn't really buy it. And it's really owed to me. But I grabbed it when he was still alive. And we believe him because he has a migui, which tells us that he has the better claim, that it was Michaim, not like the Bakara, who is saying it happened after death. Now, on this psak halacha, the Gemara asks, but Va'am Rish Lakish said, Hagoidorois is a reference to small animals. And the reason why they're called Goidrois is because, based on the pasuk of Amidbar Lamed Beis, that's called Gidrois Sain, that the little sheep are kept in pens, which is what they're kept in. So that's what they call Goidorois. So Rish Lakish says that small animals, Ein lehen chazaka, a person cannot consider it if he has it in his domain, which we know is owned by someone else up until now. The one who's holding on to it cannot say, oh, what am I doing with it? Obviously, I bought it from that other person. The reason is because, no, maybe he found it and it just, he brought it into his house because it's normal for these animals to graze and to just wander off, and therefore he took it into his house. So the fact that you're holding on to it doesn't mean, although generally, chazaka, komashatachas, yodishal, odemishaloi, whatever you have, why am I having it? Obviously, I bought it from that person. That itself indicates that it's mine. But Rish Lakish says that gedaras, that's not a chazaka, because they could wander off. So the question is, why did Rav Nachman say that's a migu that he could have said, what am I doing with this animal? Obviously, I bought it. That's not true. Because gedaras, small animals, the fact that you have it is not a raya. So the Gemara answers, shani taira, that an ox is different to Mesira L'Raya. Because since that's given over to a watchman to watch it, so they don't just wander off. And if you do have it, that would be an indicator that you had purchased it. It would be considered a chazaka. And he could have made such a claim, and he didn't. He said, I grabbed it. But he said he grabbed it Michayim, and therefore, since he has the migu, the koyach ha'tayna, that he could have said a better claim, and he didn't. So therefore, we believe him in contrast to what the watchman said, and therefore goes to him, it goes to the one who grabbed it, to the Balchayiv, and not to the Yershin. Marasa brings another story. The Bein Nasiya, the household of the Nasi, Tafis Amsa the Yasmin Mesimta. They grabbed the maidservant of orphans, meaning the person died, and owed the house of the Nasi money. So they went and they grabbed the maidservant of the orphans, Mesimta, from this area of the Simta. So Yosef Reb Avo, Reb Chanina Bar Papi, Reb Yitzchak Nafcha, these three Talmidei Chacham were sitting. And the Yosef Reb Abba Gabbai, Reb Abba was sitting with them. And the Gemara says, Amru Luhu, or they said, Amaluhu, they said to the house of the Nasi, Shaper Tafsitu, you grabbed it, very good job. And because you could grab it after Misa, and that would be going like Reb Tarfon. And moreover, you could even grab it from a Simta, because that would be like we quoted before from Yerchin Rish Lakish. So Amaluhu, Reb Abba said to them, Mishum de Bein Nasiyaninu, because he's sort of the household of the Nasi, so Machnafisuluhu, so you're flattering them. In other words, you're doing inappropriate things because it's the Nasi. But Vahadon Dainik Reb Tarfon, as we quoted in the top of this Amid, there were judges who paskin halacha like Reb Tarfon, who he's the one that says you could grab after Misa. And Vahadre Shlokesh of the Minayar, and Shlokesh made them overturn the Psak halacha and to give it back to the Yarshan, which is obviously we see from Shlokesh that you cannot be Taifis Lachar Misa, and therefore how can you say that they grabbed appropriately if it was after the death of that person? Mar brings another story. Yemer Bachashu, the name of a person, have a masik be zuzi bahu gavra, that he was trying to collect money from a certain person who was shachav, who then died, the borrower died. Now b'shavik arva, and in his estate he left over a ship. So Amalei Sayyemer said l'shluchei to his messenger, said, look, zil tafsin hale, quickly go ahead and grab that ship, because I need to get something or else it's going to be a total loss. So azil tafsi went and they grabbed it. Now, Pagubei Rav Papa, Rav Huna Berida Rishu. Now, Rav Papa and Rav Huna Berida Rishu encountered this messenger, and Amrulei said to him, look, At, you, are Teifis L'Balchayiv B'Makam Shachab L'Chayim. You're grabbing this asset for the creditor when it's a loss to other people, because other people are also creditors of this person who died now. He owed a lot of people money. Now, V'Amr B'Yechim Rechim said that a messenger that's HaTeifis, that grabs movable items of the borrower, for the purpose of L'Bal Chayiv, for a creditor, if it's B'mokim Shechav L'Chayim, if it's a situation where it's going to cause a loss for other creditors, because yes, you're doing a favor to one guy, you're grabbing for that creditor, but there's 20 other creditors that are losing out. So then as we continue on top of Peyam and Aleph, says Laikana, that it's not within the rights of this messenger to create a loss to other people, in the process of meriting a gain to the other person, and therefore he has not acquired it for his creditor, for the one who sent him on that mission. So he left the ship because he realized that it's not an appropriate thing that he could do. He cannot be Tefes L'Bal Chayiv if it's Chav L'Chayim. So the Gemara then says, Tafsu Inhu. So then Rav Papa and Yehud B'Yeshua, then they grabbed the ship because they were also creditors. Now, the creditor himself could grab it, but a shliach cannot. So the shliach had to walk away and they grabbed it. Now, since each one wanted to get it because they were owed money by this borrower, Rav Papa Mimlech Maluchi. Rav Papa, what he did was, is he started rowing with the oars to make a kinyan that way. Rav Huna Bar Yehoshua Mimasach Labashl, he was pulling with a rope to make a kinyan that way. So Mar Amar Anokining Lalakula. One of them said, "What do you mean? What I'm doing is a stronger kinyan than you, and I got the whole ship." Umar Amar Anokining Lalakula. He says, "No, mine is better. Pulling is better. Rowing is better." So Pokabuhu Rav Pinchas Bar Ami. Rav Pinchas Bar Ami encountered them in their fight over who gets the ship. Samalhui said to them, "Look, Rav Shmuel Damar Tavayu. They both say, as we quoted on the previous Amid, this whole halacha only applies of even if you're saying like Reb Tarfon, obviously, because you want to be typhus from Yisaimim, which is not in their domain, but they qualify Reb Tarfon's halacha only if it's piled up in Rishus HaRabim, in the public domain, which is totally no man's land. But it wouldn't work in a simta. And therefore here, where the ship was probably docked, that's considered a simta, which is off the larger area of the public domain, and therefore that's considered Rishus HaYershin, and you can't grab it anyway. So the Gemara says, Amrulei, they said to him, that no, we didn't find it by the edge of the river, which would be like a simta. Rather, Ananami, we also, Mecharifusa Dinaharta Fisna, we grabbed it from the middle of the river, which was where there's the large waves are there, where all the ships go, and that's like a Rishus HaRabim in aquatic, just like on land. And therefore, it is considered like Rosh Hashanah, and therefore, we could grab it. So therefore, they were fighting over who had the better kinyan. So Asli Kamei de Rava, they came in front of Rava. Amalahu, he said to them, Kokei Chivari, which literally means white geese. And he called them because they were elderly men. Mishalchi Glimi de Inchi, you're stripping clothing off people. And that is, you have no rights to take the ship in the first place. Forget about fighting over who got it. Because Hachem Rav Nachman, this word Rav Nachman said, Vuhu Shatavsi Mechaim Rav Nachman Paskin, it's only the ability to grab from a debtor if you grabbed it when they were still alive. And that's because Rav Nachman Paskin, like Rav Akiva, again, so the whole story doesn't start. Your whole premise of your argument was, if it's like Rav Tarfon, Falocha, Rav Nachman Paskin is like Rav Akiva, and you can't be typhus after the person already died, and therefore it goes to the Yershim anyway, and therefore there's nothing that you have to argue about. It's not going to either one of you, it goes to the Yershim.